All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to part 12 of Great Decisions, the second one for this year. Sponsored, as always, by Becky Navikatz, Le'ili Nishmas Yonah ben Rav Aryeh Leib. Tonight we're discussing the struggle over Jewish identity, the case of Brother Daniel. Now, the struggle over Jewish identity is a recurring, if not endemic, crisis over the last 60, 70 years, only in large part to the establishment of the State of Israel, the ingathering of the exiles, and especially the proliferation of non-Orthodox movements. As we know, even as I speak, it's an unresolved issue. And it encompasses several different areas that we'll address over the course of the year, especially conversion, but all centering on one basic question: who is a Jew? Israel defined itself as the Jewish state in its founding document. You can still hear echoes of Ben-Gurion, if you've heard that, seen that video often enough. Anu machrizim bezot al hakamat medina yehudit ve'eretz Yisrael hi medinat Yisrael. That we declare with this document the establishment of the Jewish state in the land of Israel. That is the state of Israel. So intuitively, we assume we know what is a Jew, and therefore, what is a Jewish state? For centuries, in fact, we did know. But once we remove the definitions from the obvious, that's the objective standards of halacha, into some other realm, then the definitions become much more subjective and contentious, ambiguous, and even a bit misleading. And the issue then, as now, revolves around one crucial and unique aspect of Judaism, and that's the conflation of religion and nationality, which really is unique to us. Is a Jew a member of a religious group so that he can be joined to any nationality, like an American or European? An American can be a Jew or a Christian or a Buddhist. And if an American Christian, say, converts to Judaism, he becomes a Jew, but his Americanism is unaffected by it. Or is a Jew a member of a national group, the nation of Israel, so that as long as he's bound to the Jewish people, that is his national identity? Now, note, for example, that the many countries in the world that have identity cards that list nationality of the citizen, and it's often listed Jew for Jews, whether practicing or not, whether they consider themselves part of the Jewish nation and not the Jewish religion, whether in fact they were Jews according to halacha. So for example, in the old Soviet Union, a Jew's nationality card would be listed as a Jew even if just his father was Jewish. Maybe just his grandfather was Jewish, even though he's not a Jew anymore. Or is it both? Is it both a religion and a nationality? So we know the correct answer that has confounded our critics and many Jews over the millennia is that it is both. Hirsch used the phrase a religio nation. Judaism is both a dat and a le'um, a religion and a nationality. This is all summarized concisely in one word, well, verse, really a foundational pasuk in our formative stage as a people. God tells Moshe in the prelude to the redemption from Egypt, one of the four expressions of Gula, V'lakachti eschem li le'om, V'hayisi lochem le'lokim. I'll take you as my people, an am, a nation, and I will be your God, a dat. It's a le'um and a dat. And yet the Gemara says in Sofen, the pasuk familiar to us from Hallel, Dalosi v'li Yehoshia. Paitan said, David HaMelech said that we become impoverished and yet you'll save us. But why? Why is that? Mark says in Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis and Daf last week, Amar Knesset Yisrael Lefakadosh Baruch Hu. People of Israel came and said before God, Ribono Shel Olam, Afal Pi Shedalo Ani B'Mitzvos. Even though we are impoverished in mitzvos, Lecha Ani, we still belong to you, V'li Noel LeHoshia. And therefore it's appropriate, fitting, that you save us. Rashbam says, Li no'elo shia, yosa mikol umo, sharei yisrael yichaducha, because we're miyachid Hashem, because we stand for something as a nation. We say in Musaf and the Kedusha, Am hamiyachadim shemo, we're a nation that unifies God's name, that's our nation. Even if we have no mitzvahs at all, we're still part of the nation. But most people have never been able to wrap themselves around this concept, which is unique in the history of mankind. It's given us as Jews a shared lifestyle, shared value, shared history, shared destiny. One who enters the Jewish people from the outside undergoes tevilah, become part of the dot, milah, becomes part of the le'um. But what happens when that duality frays, as it did beginning with Spinoza, or with the rise of reform, or with conversions and intermarriages, with today's environment in which most Jews, according to the Pew study, see themselves as ethnic Jews, le'um, but not at all as part of the Jewish religion, dot. What happens when the state of Israel doesn't fully embrace that duality, but introduces a concept that emphasizes the le'umiyut, Israeli citizenship, but not the datiyut, Jewish identity? What happens is we get problems. And that brings us first to Brother Daniel, tonight's topic. Who was Brother Daniel? Shmuel Rufeisen, Oswald Rufeisen, was born in Zivich, Poland on January 29th, 1922. Family wasn't religious, but as a teenager, he joined the Akiva Zionist Youth Group. Not the Akiva, but Akiva, a Zionist youth group. He did Hakshara for 2 years, learning farming and planning for his Aliyah. Unfortunately for him and millions of others, World War II intervened. He went into hiding. He was first arrested by the Nazis. He escaped. And then, first in Vilna, then in Mir, he assumed a new identity, false identity, with papers as a German Christian who spoke perfect Polish. And in that capacity, he worked as a translator in the Gestapo headquarters in Mir. In that position, he was of enormous assistance to the Jewish community. So Mir Yeshiva had already left for Shanghai the year before he came. But from within headquarters, he began to help his fellow Jews. He warned Jews about Nazi actions that were going to take place. He smuggled weapons out of the Gestapo storehouse to the partisans in Mir. And all this culminated in one tremendous act of sacrifice. He informed the Jews of the imminent Nazi plans to liquidate the ghetto in 1943. At least 300 Jews escaped to the forests and lived, were spared, all attributable to Rufeisen. In 1942, he was identified as a Jew by a Jew who recognized him from the Akiva Zionist group, apparently resented his position and betrayed him to the Nazis in Mir. Rufeisen escaped. At one point he joined the Russian partisans. The Russians soon thought him a spy. Not many Polish Jews were leaving Poland then. They sent him to death. And he was saved, this time by a Jew who revealed his true identity to the Russians as a Jew who helped Jews escape the Nazis. But Rufeisen then fled to a nunnery, a monastery, in 1942. He hid there for a time, even wore a habit on occasion to avoid detection when the Nazis would enter. Some habits are hard to break. And he converted to Catholicism in 1942. Yeah, you saw that coming. In 1945, after the war, he studied for the priesthood. He became a Carmelite monk, and he took the name Brother Daniel, hence his name. He always retained an attachment to the Jewish people in his own mind. He even became a witness against the Nazis at some of the war crimes trials. Even in the 1980s, he went to London to testify against the vicious Nazi police chief of Mir. And Rufeisen still nurtured one strong desire, Aliyah. In 1948, he began requesting a passport from the Polish authorities to allow him to emigrate from Poland. Then already Poland was under communist dictatorship, wasn't easy to leave. Wanted to go to Israel permanently, writing to the authorities that he, quote, belongs to the Jewish nation, notwithstanding his acceptance of the Catholic faith and his admission to the monastery in 1945. Now, it wasn't only Aliyah that drove him. Obviously, we know that in the 40s and 50s, tremendous outbreaks of Jew hatred in Poland after the war. Kilts we all know about, but the late 40s, early 50s as well. The world center of the Carmelite monks is where? Har Carmel, hence the name, in Haifa. He also had a brother who escaped Europe and was living on a farm on a moshav north of Haifa. So he was natural for that Carmelite monastery. Nothing happened for years till he went to see a Jew named Hirsch Smolar. It's a Polish-Jewish communist bureaucrat whom he'd known from the partisans. And Smolar was astonished. He first rejected him that he'll never get out of Poland. And then he said, why don't you just say that you're a Jew who wants to rejoin his family in Israel rather than go through the whole story of telling everyone you're a Jewish Catholic monk. In the end, Smolar helped Rufeisen get his exit papers from Poland. Before he left, he went to see Kadriel Katz. Kadriel Katz was Israel's envoy, then stationed in Poland. Some of you may remember, he became the consul general in New York in the 60s. Under Katz's watch, some 40,000 Polish Jews made Aliyah in the 1950s. So he went to see Kadriel Katz, Rufeisen did, in order to seek Israeli citizenship pursuant to the law of return. Katz hesitated and even warned Rufeisen not to renounce his Polish citizenship because he doesn't know if Rufeisen will be allowed to stay in Israel dressed up in his Catholic monkish garb. Katz, on home leave, even went to visit Rufeisen's brother on the Moshav north of Haifa to ask him what he thinks is best. Should he stay in Poland or come here? In the end, Katz granted him the Ishur to make Aliyah with one catch. He would not be given Israeli citizenship and no nationality would be listed on his Tudat Oleh. Nonetheless, Rufeisen did renounce his Polish citizenship. He became a stateless person. With that, Rufeisen moved to Israel in 1958, settling in the Stella Maris Carmelite Monastery in Haifa, still exists. And he applied for citizenship as a returning Jew under the law of return, claiming to be a Jew in nationality, le'um, but not religion, dot. His application to the Misrad HaPnim, the Interior Ministry, was rejected, and Rufeisen appealed to the Supreme Court of Israel. The court decided his matter in 1962, ruling 4-1. What was the ruling? Could Rufeisen be declared a Jew under the law of return? According to Halacha, is he still a Jew? So the case obviously made waves. That was one of our great decisions. And we'll return to the decision later. Keep the suspense going. First, what could be the basis of the decision? On what would they rule? What defined Israeli law until that point? Now, we all know one of the founding principles of the State of Israel was that no Jew should ever again feel homeless or stateless. The Declaration of Independence, Megillat Atzmaut, openly called upon all Jews to return home. Now that's a sensitive point, which if misunderstood or purposely distorted by those who did it, by many who perceive Judaism as a religion and not a nationality, could and did engender accusations of dual loyalty against Jews of other countries. In fact, we know it has. The next to last paragraph of the Megillat Asmud, we appeal to the Jewish people throughout the diaspora. Litlakeit saviv ha-yishuv ba'aliyah uvinyan, to rally around, to unite your Jews of Eretz with the Jews of Eretz Yisrael in the tasks of immigration and upbuilding, and to stand by them in the great struggle for the realization of the age-old dream, the redemption of Israel. Earlier in the document, a few paragraphs before, it was also clear, Medinat Yisrael teptucha la'aliyah yehudit ulekibbutz galiyot. The State of Israel is open to Jewish immigration and for the ingathering of the exiles. So this was actualized in reality. First, the liberation of the DP and internment camps after Operation Magic Carpet, and in the law, first through the Chok HaShvut, the law of return. Now, the law of return was actually the brainchild of the longtime Mafdal leader, Zerach Bar Haftig, but certainly was an obvious goal of Ben-Gurion as well, because it was an explicit and in-your-face reversal of the white paper that had restricted Jewish immigration. Now, that odious document was to be renounced and Jewish immigration would be welcome, the land of Israel would be open to it. The law of return also enunciated the Zchut HaShvut, the right of return. So it was first adopted in 1950 and was very straightforward in its intent. Kol Yehudi Zakai La'alot Arza. Every Jew has the right to make Aliyah. Aliyah Tiyah Pi Oshrat Oleh. It has to be done with a permit given to the Oleh, the immigrant. That Yeshua should be given to every Oleh, Shebid Ritzono L'Shtakeh B'Yisrael, who express a desire to settle in Israel, Chutz, except for the two cases, the exceptions, Im Nochach Sar HaAliyah Shem Mevakesh, if the present Minister of Interior finds that one, Po'el Neged Ha'am HaYudi, that the applicant is working against the Jewish people, you could ban a lot of people on that basis, they haven't, or two, alul sakein briyut hatzibur o bitachon hamedina, liable to impair, to jeopardize the health of the community or the security of the country. So that clause, briyut hatzibur, was used once against Meyer Lansky when he applied for Aliyah in 1972. He was rejected. You remember, of course, from Godfather 2, but that's a separate issue. He was rejected and got to Israel on this clause, briefly, he was a threat to public order. Left unclear, listen to the first clause again. Kol Yehudi Zakai La'alot Arza. Every Jew has a right to make Aliyah. Left unclear, really undefined, because it was obvious, was who's the Yehudi we're talking about. It was obvious because only the halachic definition of a Jew was extant then. And the burden of proof was on the applicant to show he was Jewish. Now the early cases in the years of the state dealt mainly with a very sensitive issue. Intermarried Jews whose children were not Jewish, especially the emotionally impactful and poignant cases of people persecuted as Jews during the Holocaust because they had a Jewish father, who then came to Israel and were told they're not Jews. I mean, you could have gone through the concentration camps, and yet you're told now that you're not a Jew. This issue will recur again in the 70s. We'll discuss it another time. We'll talk about the conversion cases. But it's a very powerful, although substantially weak argument. But nonetheless, that argument existed. Take other cases. You have righteous non-Jews, righteous Gentiles who saved Jews, all right? Even married Jews, they came to Israel, they're not Jewish, all right? There's one famous case, I spoke a couple of years ago in Shul, a fellow asked, his father's a Pole, his mother's a Jew, they married after the war, they came to Israel, his father dies, father saved his mother, that's how they met. Father hid, saved the mother during the war, father dies, can he say Kaddish for his non-Jewish father? One of the first questions you have of that nature in recent times. Now bear in mind that non-Jews can also become citizens of Israel. It takes a little longer. You have to be approved first, but non-Jewish immigrants can become citizens after an approved residence of 2 years. In fact, Rufeisen was told to drop his appeal, and they would look favorably upon his application for citizenship as a non-Jew, but he refused. It's always been a public relations nightmare, because while we understand the importance and necessity of the Chuk HaShvut, of the law of return, anything that limits personal rights based on religion in a national context is frowned upon in the Western world. And this hasn't changed, getting worse, not better. So take this for example. January 19th, 1965, Brooks Atkinson, ever hear the name? The theater named after him on Broadway, the Times theater critic for many years. He wrote a culture column. On that date, in this column, he lambasted the law of return. He's not Jewish. Suggesting that a Jew is one, I quote, who accepts and lives in the Jewish culture, unquote. He concluded that as long as the rabbinate in Israel can say who is a Jew and that Jews can't marry non-Jews, it will be, I quote, an ugly streak of bigotry in Israel, end of quote. The very next day, Rabbi Israel Miller, then president of the RCA, Olam HaShalom, father of our own Michael Miller, responded with a letter in the Times saying as follows, the fact that one lives as a Jew or subjected to disabilities as a Jew does not automatically make one a Jew. any more than an alien in America who serves in the military and sees himself as an American is therefore an American citizen. It's a very powerful analogy. I've used it myself over the years. There are procedures, he wrote, for acquiring American citizenship in this country, even as there are Jewish procedures for becoming a member of the Jewish faith community. Period. Seems pretty obvious. But the secularization of Jewish life generally and the conflation of Jewish and Israeli identities in particular have shattered that sentiment and engendered more than 50 years of confusion and controversy that hasn't ended and shows no signs of abating. Aware of the storm, and soon after Rufeisen applied for citizenship under the Chuk HaShvut, the storm was mainly in reference to intermarried children, the children of the intermarried, the Israeli government in 1958 did what all governments have to do when they're forced to deal with controversial issues that will anger at least some people. What do? They formed a commission to investigate the matter. The Attorney General then, Chaim Cohn, had ruled as policy and insisted the ministry follow it, that from his perspective, a Jew under the law of return is any person who declares, I quote, any person who declares in good faith that he is a Jew and does not adhere to another religion. Meaning he left it very speculative except for the last part. If you adhere to another religion, you can't be a Jew under the law of return. We have to recognize, though, another very powerful force at work. When is this discussion taking place? It's less than a decade and a half after the Holocaust tertiated the Jewish people, reduced our numbers by a third, 18 million down to 12 million. There was a powerful sentiment to try to call as many people Jews as possible, and especially if the Nazis persecuted them as Jews. So remember, the Nazis murdered as Jewish even a person who had one Jewish grandparent, one Jewish grandfather out of eight, all you needed. So in fact, if you, eight would be great-grandparents, but even there you have, I think, a third-degree Michelin. It wasn't a bracha either. In effect, you could be a third-generation practicing Christian and the Nazis would still persecute you as a Jew under Nazi law. It's an argument that packs an emotional wallop, even if it's, truth be told, intellectually shallow. Someone once wrote that Hitler murdered 6 million Jews. Should he become our posek also? Should we let him decide questions of Jewish law? If we do that, we give him another posthumous victory, the destruction of Torah. All right, I wrote it, but I quote myself too. The Soviets applied Jewish nationality to someone with just a Jewish father, and he persecuted him too. So none of this accords with halacha, but what should be followed, the halacha or the emotion? For many, many decades, in these affairs, emotion has really prevailed. On October 27th, 1958, Ben-Gurion sent a private letter to more than 50 Jewish thinkers from across the world, Israel, Europe, America, rabbis, scholars, professors, writers, jurists, and solicited their opinion to advise the committee. How should Israel register the children of non-Jewish mothers and Jewish fathers? Are the Jewish religion and nationality separate concepts, or are they indelibly linked? This is his letter. Now, Ben-Gurion emphasized that the issue in Israel is not similar at all to the exile. He said Israel has immigrants from all different backgrounds, and therefore they have to foster cooperation and unity, and Israel does not have the assimilation problem that exists in the West. Ha! But, he said, Jews in Israel are not a minority struggling to retain their identity. They're a majority, and so even the mixed married assume something of an Israeli identity. This is true. Look at the maybe 300,000 Russian Jews, Russians in Israel who are not Jewish, to halacha. And again, some are third generation Christian, Russian Orthodox. They don't know of Pesach and Sukkot and Shabbat. Of course they do. They have to celebrate along with everybody else. So they do. Israeli identity includes a lot of these Jewish cultural or religious events. On the other hand, the Jews of Israel, he wrote, do not see themselves as a separate people from the Jews of the Gola. We're part of the same nation. So how will the decision impact upon the global Jewish community? Now, to Ben-Gurion's credit, he asked the question, and from such a diverse group of people, you can't even imagine such a thing happening today. The letter went through of Aaron Cutler, of Lakewood, Rav Yecheskel Sarn of Chevron Yeshiva in Israel, Rav Yosef Kahaneman, Ponovich Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik of YU Reeds, Rav Shlomo Gorn, who was the chief rabbi of the IDF then, the Sri Dei Shichliat of Weinberg in Switzerland, Rav Toach, the chief rabbi of Italy, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and also Shaul Lieberman from the Jewish Theological Seminary, Abraham Heschel from the seminary, Solomon Freehoff, the famous Reform rabbi, Mordechai Kaplan, Shai Agnon, and sundry members of the Israeli Supreme Court, including the aforementioned Chaim Cohn. Now, he's a very interesting case. Chaim Cohn was born into a very well-known rabbinic family. His grandfather was Shlomo Karlibach, one of the most esteemed Rabbonim in all of Germany, and yes, the grandfather of his namesake, the singer of Shlomo Karlibach, who was yahrzeit just 2 days ago. So Chaim Cohn and Shlomo Karlibach were first cousins. He grew up in a frum home. He made aliyah against his parents' wishes in the 30s, and he became a Talmud in Merkaz. Then he went to Hebrew University and went completely off the derech. Became a complete apikoros and a kofir of the eating on Yom Kippur variety, and a real leftist who would set the far left tone of Israel's high court already in the 60s, from which it has never fully recovered. We'll get back to him a little later. The answers dealt mainly with the conversion question, the children of the intermarried question, and tangentially with this issue of a Rufeisen type case, Brother Daniel. The respondents, interestingly enough, overwhelmingly, more than 82%, favored a traditional halachic definition of Jewish identity, even among the non-Orthodox scholars, even Shaul Lieberman and Abraham Heschel. They said, no, the halacha is halacha. A Jew is a child of a Jewish mother, or convert according to halacha. In the end, 46 different opinions were filed, of which 38 urged adhering to the halachic definition of Jewishness, 3 suggested it should be the will of the parents, and 5 said there should be special leniency for the children of mixed marriages. Of course, like all governments who form commissions to seek advice and counsel, think Obama and the Simpson-Bowles Commission, Ben-Gurion accepted their recommendation and then ignored them, doing exactly what he wanted. Now we'll look at some, and specifically some of the issues that made the Rufeisen case so controversial, because even among the rabbis there was not unanimity. Here's the question. What is the status, the Jewish status of a convert out, a meshumet? These letters were assembled and published by Baruch Litvin in 1965. We'll visit him again this year. Baruch Litvin wrote the famous book, The Sanctity of the Synagogue. He was a real activist in Mount Clemens, Michigan, in support of a mechitza, insisting that shuls that had mechitzas cannot remove them. He would sue to insist that shuls' constitution be honored. He assembled these letters, was published, republished this year by his granddaughter, Jean Litvin, lives out on the West Coast. It was given to me a few months ago by Yaron Chaim Weichner, and I thank him. Again, in the current environment, it's simply unimaginable that so many different types of Jewish thinkers would be consulted and that they would answer. And even here, if you read the letters, and I did, there was discomfort and a willful attempt at disassociation. So one respondent, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon, who was the head of Mizrahi, said to Ben-Gurion, you addressed the letter to Chachmei Yisrael, but I have no connection with many of these sages, and I place no stock upon their wisdom. Many criticized, asking people whose expertise was not in halacha, but in other areas, a poet, a scientist, has no role in this discussion. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin wrote, they're not authorities. The chief rabbi of France, Rav Yaakov Kaplan, took offense at being asked. He said, this is a matter for the chief rabbinate of Israel to decide, not outsiders, and certainly not the government of Israel. No secular government has the right to decide who is a Jew. Religious leaders are the ones to rule on such a question. The government, on the other hand, is the one to determine who is a citizen of the state of Israel. I never read this before. I was gratified to read this because this is the very essence of the Przanski Jewish Identity Act of 1989, which went nowhere. Like the Przanski Peace Plan of 1987, also went nowhere. But I wrote then, it's a long time ago, it's 25 years ago, the government of Israel can determine who are the citizens of Israel, but they can no more determine who is a Jew than the Knesset can vote to make Shabbos Sunday, or they could decide to take an apple on Sukkot and not an Esrog. They don't have that right. Nobody delegated the right to them to pass in Shilas. Only a handful dealt with the issue of a Jew's embrace another religion, but they're quite revealing. Is such a person still considered a Jew? So what would be our initial response? Of course, someone born a Jew is always a Jew. There's no such thing as opting out. What's the old joke? You convert, yeah, the Mishalachim will still find you. Or, it just occurred to me today, you know, the jokes run through my mind. An old joke, a guy tells his wife he converted to Christianity. She's fine. Wakes up the next morning, she sees him wearing towels and tefillin. He says to her, I thought you converted. He said, hey, guy, you should come. So the Jewish religion and the Jewish nationality are the same and cannot be bifurcated. What's a simple halacha? Like Chaim just said, Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Dal, Amar Aleph. Chota Yisrael, Ochon sinned, the book of Yeshua, but the pasuk says Israel sinned, the nation, Om Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, Achapi Shechota Yisrael Hu. A Jew sins is still a Jew. One of the respondents of Shom Yitzhak Halevi, who's the Rev of the Temanim in Tel Aviv, a Dayan as well, wrote that a person like a Rufeisen is in the category of a son who disobeys his father, nevertheless, he remains his son. Judaism is a quality that's not changeable. So wrote Rav Halevi. According to this, Rufeisen, brother Daniel, was a Jew. Yet, this three-day age, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, who was then a Rosh Yeshiva in Montreux, Switzerland, had a different approach. Now the Sri Deish, that's the name of his famous book of responsa, was an out-of-the-box thinker to begin with. It's a genius who did not live a happy life, truth be told. To Talmud in Slobodka, he was married off at a very young age by the Alt of Slobodka, who feared that Rav Weinberg would go off to university, fall off the derech, be lost to the world of Torah, unless he was married and received a rabbinical position. So he married, he got the post, he did that, and he was miserable. Eventually divorcing his wife, which was scandalous back then, never remarrying, never having children, going to university anyway. He suffered during the Holocaust, he survived the Holocaust. He refused to go to Israel after the war, either because his ex-wife had remarried and was living there, or because he could not simply fit into a rabbinic establishment. In any event, he responded to Ben Gurion, who offered a very poetic description of what is a Jew. But it's not really a halachic description, because he maintained, I quote, a Jew is he or she who believes in the God of Israel, is devoted to our Torah with heart and soul, and observes its precepts and commandments in his everyday life. We have no other Judaism, only the one of devotion to and observance of Torah and its commandments. This is the legal, historic, and the only true Judaism. That is a definition that is extremely limiting. It would not only exclude Brother Daniel, but seemingly any Jews, not observant. They're out of the club. And in a letter he termed the non-Orthodox movements, I quote, an irresponsible pseudo-religious construction of people who have no religious motivations in their hearts, nor any national pride. And then it got tough. By the way, in much of the leftist fringe of Orthodoxy, the Sridei Eish is celebrated as a liberal, with one major psaki here every Monday and Thursday, really an exaggeration of what he writes, the famous Heter allowing mixed singing in youth groups, and a general permissiveness about Kol Isha. He doesn't sound so open here. And he continues that in other nations, nationalism and religion are distinct. An Englishman can convert to any religion remain an Englishman. Judaism is a little different, he says. It is not so with our people. Even an ardent nationalistic Jew Be he even an Israeli citizen of long standing, a taxpayer, a member of the Israeli army, should he, chas v'shalom, abandon his Jewish faith and embrace another, he would cease to be a Jew in any wise. Renouncing his religion in favor of another carries with it renunciation of his Jewish nationality and his people. An apostate would be barred or expelled from membership in even the most radical group of Jews. Where do you find such a concept? Well, you see, the Truvos, you have even the Rishonim, but certainly the modern ones, you find similar expressions. Have you understood? Chacham Uvadja, Zichrono Bracha, writes in the first chelik of Yabia Omer in Yoredeya, Kol Shehu, just quoting someone else, Kol Shehu Mishumad Avodah Zarah Dino Kegoy Gamor. A person who is an apostate for idolatry, he has a din of a complete non-Jew. So to the Minchas Yitzchak in Chelik Aleph, in Kibel Das Acheres Ein Lo Chelik Benachlo B'Yisrael. Person who embraces another faith, he has no portion, no share in Israel. Can a Jew who converts out, or purports to convert out, count in a minyan? It's a big machlokas. But why should this be so? Note that even in our world, there's one group of Jews that are barred from the Jewish community, from Federation, from the Conference of Presidents. Every Jew, every umbrella Jewish group bars them, and that's Jews for Jesus. So think about it. Why should that be so? Why should that mistaken belief disqualify a person from the Jewish community, make the case stronger? Let's say a Jew observes Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras Mishpacha, and he wears tefillin every day, and Rachman al-Islam, he believes that Jesus was the Messiah. How can he be worse than a Jew who rejects Jesus but rejects all the mitzvahs also? What sense does that make? And that's the norm of the Jewish community. So the answer is that no one can convert out, but there is a change in status for the apostate. Note even what Chacham Uvadja quoted, Dino k'goy gamor. His din is like a goy gamor. Not that he becomes a goy. He has the din of a goy. He's not considered a Jew like other Jews. In 1963, it's now 50 years ago, a young Rav Aaron Lichtenstein made this point in one of his first published articles entitled Brother Daniel and the Jewish Fraternity. It was published in a quarterly named Judaism. It was republished in Leaves of Faith. Now, Rav Aaron noted that in the exile, quote, continually bludgeoned and harassed, the Jew generally had neither the leisure nor the inclination to define himself. Mere survival was the key. But the Jewish state changed all that in two ways. One might begin to argue that Jews living in Israel are more Jewish than Jews outside. Well, conversely, that non-Jews living in Israel are also, in some sense, within the community of Israel. In fact, it's a big issue today with the burial of non-Jewish IDF soldiers in a Jewish cemetery. The question is very powerful. Person sacrifices his life to save the state of Israel, the Jewish state of Israel. So how can he be banished to some corner of another cemetery? So how do we relate to apostates? Clearly, Brother Daniel would be construed as a mumer l'chol ha'Torah kula, an apostate, a meshumad, the lowest level and the worst of all apostates. They could be partial apostates, mumer l'davar echad, for one mitzvah they reject, or a person rejects the mitzvah l'achis, because they're just angry at God, or they won't do a mitzvah l'teyavon, which is more common. Their appetites, they want to do it. Not addressed in his essay, very interestingly, is the effect of the Holocaust on all this. Either in feelings of gratitude towards the church, because his life was spared, by the church really, because that's where he hid, or simply conversion out of anger against God because of the Holocaust. You're never in a good position when you judge survivors. It's not a good place to be. I remember some of us, my brother was with us, some might have traveled to Spain with us, and the Israeli who was with us was born, remember, I think the Vogels were there too. He was born in 1940 in the Netherlands, and he was hidden during the, well, I'll get to the story. We don't go into churches by policy, and he had an affinity. It wasn't a church in Spain he didn't want to go into. And Fai said to him, it has to stop, because we don't allow it. Sometimes he goes himself, sometimes he shuts other people with him, and he tells him it has to stop. Then he told the group, his parents put him in a Catholic, in a monastery for 2 years. So when he was two, or one and a half, from 41 to 45, he lived with the Catholics. The first time he said the word fathers to a priest, he can't get out of his system. He has a Hakara Satov. They saved him. And that really, to me, I understood now where he's coming from. He's just drawn. He's a firm fellow. He's drawn to coming into churches. So in fact, it's a reality, but we also have to acknowledge another reality. Very, very, very few Jews chose this route, so that itself speaks to the dastardliness of the act. Converting to save one's life, but permanently converting. Rambam says in Hilchas Tshuva, Perek Gimel, Halacha Zayin, Mumu L'chol HaTorah Kula, a person who renounces the whole Torah. Kedon, like Hachozim L'dasei Ha'ovdei Kochavim, B'shah She'gozim Gzeirah, who converts to another faith during times of persecution and decrees, V'yibakbahem, and he cleaves to them. And he says, Ma betzali lihidavek b'Yisrael, what good is there, what profit in cleaving to Israel? Shem shalim v'nirdafim, they're lowly, they're harassed, persecuted. Tovli shed bakba elu shiyadam tkifa, better I should attach myself to the winner, to the people who are prevailing. Such a person is no chelek l'olam haba. But even before they reach heaven, their status changes on earth. This is from the Gemara already. The Meshumad's Shechita is no good. He can't write a Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah just burnt, it's not even shameless. He cannot bring a carbon. He's excluded from the realm of Achicha. When the Torah uses the word Achicha, means your brother, Achicha b'mitzvos. He's not the... How far does this extend? Rabbeinu Tam's opinion, which is a minority opinion, but a substantial one, held that a Jew can lend an apostate money on interest. With interest. As if he's not Jewish. The Tosfos in Avodah Zarah, Chavzayim Adbeis, Chavavim Adbeis, against Rashi. It's a much debated issue in halacha. Many others held, he's still a Jew. So an apostate's marriage to a Jew is valid. The Rambam says it openly. Yisrael Meshumad Shekidesh, Afal Pi She'ovei Avodah Zarah, Irtzono, Hare Elu Kigushin Gemurim, Utsrichin Mimenu Get. A Meshumad who marries a Jew, marries a marriage, needs a get. And yet there's another case that seems to contradict this. The Gemara in Yevamos Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph questions whether there should be a suffek in every intermarriage. What's a suffek? Maybe that non-Jew is a descendant of one of the 10 lost tribes. Who knows? Gemara says, Lo zazu misham ad she'asahum ovdei kochav gemurim. They rule that anyone who's outside our world, outside the world of whom we know are Jews, they're to be considered as non-Jews according to everybody. Shenema ba'ashem bagdu kivanim zarim yaladu. They betray God by fathering alien children. So there are certain people, Kusum the Gemara says, who might be Jews, who are nonetheless characterized as non-Jews. So what's the difference? So here of Aaron has a chiluk in halacha. Distinguish between the ben nechar, from the Karban Pesach, called ben nechar l'yochaba. What's the ben nechar? So the Gemara says in Zvach, in the Chavbez and the Beis, shenisnaku ma'asov le'oviv shebashamayim, whose deeds have alienated him from God. There's another type of ben nechar, who alienates himself as a person, meaning as a gavra. There's a ben nechar who's disqualified because of his deeds, his maisim. Another ben nechar is disqualified because of as a gavra. The person is no longer part of the fold. Bahashem bagadu. And he related that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik once refused to attend a communal event in honor of an apostate who helped Jews. Even though he had aided, famous story, complete kofrim, Bundists, he said that the Bundist is a sinner, but the apostate's children will not even know they're Jewish. That's a sentiment that led many generations of Jews until recent times to anathematize the intermarried, sit shiva, especially where the mother is not Jewish, although the enthusiasm for that approach has waned considerably in the last few decades. So are they Jews or are they not Jews? Are they full-time Jews or part-time Jews? The Iri Bar Zochakira from the Rav and explains that a Jew has two statuses. There's the Shem Yisrael, the designation as a Jew, the physical attachment to the Jewish people, and there's Kedushas Yisrael, the sacredness of the Jewish personality, a metaphysical state. So Rav Aaron said the apostate retains his Shem Yisrael, but he forfeits his Kedushas Yisrael. As we see, let's say a Jew purports to convert out, wants to come back. Does he have to go to the mikvah? So Ramos says in the Yerodea, Reish Samich Ches, Sif Yud Beis, Yisrael Mumer Shosef Shuva, Ein Tzorach Litpo. The apostate does not have to immerse himself in the mikvah on the way back, but Rak Midrabanon, Yesh Lo Litpo, Ulekabel Alav Dibre Chaveres Bifnei Shosha. Midrabanon, he's doing tzvila in the mikvah, like a ger does, and accept again the obligations of Torah before a basin of three. If the apostate completely alienates himself from the Jewish people, then he's the Ben Necha who loses his Kedushas Yisrael. But for our purposes, if he loses his Kedushas Yisrael, but retains his Shem Yisrael, then he registers a Jew in Israel. Rav Aaron notes that the church is pretty adamant on its exclusivity. A Jewish Christian is a contradiction in terms. We would do well to consider the point seriously, especially considering that Rufeisen is a monk, well, they do wear yarmulkes. Kedarko Bakodesh, Rav Aaron refused to rule on the case specifically, because the article was published a year after the decision. But is it completely clear? Can we say that a person, a Holocaust survivor, in his misguided understanding, converts to Christianity, but still considers himself a Jew, is not a Jew? A person who aided other Jews during the Holocaust, a person who wants to make Aliyah as a Jew, is not a Jew? So if I were to recognize the imperative of the Jewish people as a religio nation, what the Rav called the community of the committed, I quote, it is not only the source of our chosenness, it is the cause of our being a people at all. Once we stood at Sinai, our peoplehood is irrevocable, but it's a peoplehood rooted in Kedushas Yisrael. We're born into a nation, into a history, into a destiny. To be part of Knesset Yisrael is not just biological, it's a spiritual community. And the ger, the convert, enters not only the Jewish present, but a future, but embraces the past as well. Quote the Sifra at the beginning of Vayikra, the pasuk says, Adam ki yakiv karban mikem, person who brings an offering from you, so the Sifra Darshan's Adam, or Rabbah says a ger, convert can bring a karban. Mikem, lahotzi esan mishumadim, to exclude the apostates. They can't bring karbanos. Ma b'nei yisro makabale bris, afager makabale bris, Jews accept the covenant, converts accept the covenant, hamishumadim apostates, Shehein and Makabele Bris, they don't accept, they reject the covenant, they're out. So the Meshuman either rejects Judaism as a religion, or Knesset Yisrael as a people, or both. Could be alienated from both as well. And when Kedushas Yisrael is lost, the person is lost as well. For it to be retained, there must be, I quote, a minimum of spiritual identification. And he ends on a very lofty note. The heights to which Kedushas Yisrael calls the Jew are immeasurable. The mountain of the Lord is infinitely high, but if there is no ceiling, there is a floor, and beneath it, the abyss. It's hard to decipher what his conclusion would be in this case. There clearly is some identification, Rufeisen, at least with the people, not at all with the religion. Almost all the respondents urged Ben-Gurion not to separate between religion and nationality. Even Harry Wolfson of Harvard said, call the children of the mixed married Hebrews, make them citizens, just, I quote, don't touch the name Jew. Because from Israelis also don't need Hebrews. Israeli High Court ruled 1962 at 16 Pesquet Din 2428, if you want to look it up. They ruled 4-1 that Rufeisen could not be registered as a Jew according to the law of return. The term Jew in the Chok HaShvut These to be interpreted according to normal usage. And the court emphasized they distinguish between the term Yehudi, as understood in a religious sense, and the term Yehudi according to the laws of the state of Israel. Ben dat acheret eino yechol lehirasham kiyehudi. A person belongs to another faith cannot be registered as a Jew. Chief Justice Moshe Silberg, remember him from the Eichmann Court, wrote that the modern Zionist in Zion does not deny the heritage of his forefathers. Rufeisen does. Justice Landau, an apostate has created a barrier between himself and the national life of the Jewish people. The Chok HaShvut is part of the link between diaspora Jewry and the unity of the Jewish people. And the court added that they're not determining who is a Jew for religious purposes, only who can receive a Tudat Oleh as a Jew for the purposes of Israeli citizenship. On his Tudat Oleh, Rufeisen Tudat Oleh, the space for nationality was left blank. He was neither a Pole nor a Jew. So I said it's 4-1. Who was the dissenter? The aforementioned Chaim Cohn. But not because, according to Halacha, we might construe Rufeisen as Jewish. Justice Cohn began now his torment of Torah Jewry. When he was Attorney General, he had ruled that it suffices for a Jew, for him at least, for a Jew to declare, anyone to declare himself a Jew, and so he ruled here as well. If Rufeisen declared in good faith that he's Jewish, the Chok HaShvut did not mandate any further review. It's interesting, really unacceptable. He had responded to Ben-Gurion's letter as Attorney General, then as Justice, and yet sat on the case when it was being heard, which is unthinkable in an American context, should have refused himself. Anyway, the court here emphasized something else that would plague this area until today. They boasted that Israel is not a theocratic state, and that this case is proof. I quote, "Had we applied religious classification of Jewish law to the applicant, he would indeed have been considered Jewish." That's debatable, as we've seen, but likely true. More than even Rufeisen's faith, that declaration would shape Israeli jurisprudence in this area until today. In almost every case, the High Court rules against the Torah definition of Jewish identity, as most often it rules against the interests of Torah Jews generally. It's due overwhelmingly to the monolithic nature of the justices, essentially all secular, liberal Tel Avivians, always with at least one, usually one religious figure, who's a liberal himself, and for the most part the court has undue influence in choosing its successors. So it's always the same. It's changing very slowly, even as we speak. Today, a bill was introduced in the Knesset by the coalition to reduce the judges' power to choose their successors and give that power over to the Knesset to make the Supreme Court more representative of Israeli society. Let's see what happens. We tried before, hasn't worked out. Eventually, Rufeisen received Israeli citizenship as a non-Jew. He lived the balance of his life in the Stella Maris Carmelite Monastery in Haifa, rising to be the top monk, the aspiration of every Jew. And he insistently preached that Christianity should not and could not be severed from its Jewish roots. He retained a relation with his brother, who lived nearby. Brother Daniel died only 15 years ago, in 1998. But the storm over the application of the law of return would outlive even him, as we shall see in the coming months. I thank you very much. Next week, we'll shift gears, come back to these shores, and we'll look at the controversy in the 50s over mixed rabbinic boards, especially the famous letter of the Rosh Yeshiva, banning the participation of Orthodox shuls in the Synagogue Council of America and the like. We'll look at the denominational wars of the 1950s. That's next week in Great Decisions, Part 13. I thank you all very much.